Hello everyone, I'm Jamie, and this is Not Quite Hollywood, episode 11, and I'm here with...
John, and August, 11 episodes
already? Yep.
Jesus. I don't keep track.
Keeps on...
Yeah, it just kind of comes at you.
Yeah, well, we do 2 a week.
Yeah, but still, that's 11 episodes, that's pretty good. Pretty good progress.
Yeah.
Pretty good.
We celebrated 10 last week.
Yay, 10. And we didn't even have a beer.
I know. What the hell? Where's the beer?
Oh, I didn't even know how we celebrated.
No, we didn't. I was joking.
August is always drinking. So
yeah.
Well, then we have an anniversary every episode. Then.
You gotta get those drunken opinions in there, you know. So yeah, movies.
Yeah,
movies. Yes.
So we're gonna start off with the movie I chose, and it'll probably be a short discussion on it. But it was a fun little horror movie that came out last year called The Hollow, or Hallow, however you want to pronounce it. And it is director Corin Hardy's. I don't think it's his first film, but it's his love song, I guess, to creature feature type movies.
Oh, okay.
And it's about an Irish couple that moved to a little small town, and they live in a house right outside the forest of the small town. And they were getting warnings from townsfolk that, you know, don't go into the woods, it's dangerous, you know, creatures are out there. And it's a send-up to the old fairy tale myth of the fairy folk that live in the woods in Ireland.
Mm-hmm.
And they would come in and, like, steal your baby and replace it with, like, a changeling. Things like that, you know what I mean? Like, the old folk tales. And he created a really, really cool practical effect horror film where these people, this couple are getting harassed by these creatures out in the forest. And it's really cool because they use all the lore, like iron, like, fairy folk are apparently can't touch iron, it burns them and stuff. So like when they move into the house, she notices all these like iron bars on the windows and she takes them down because they look ugly.
Oh,
that's when it starts, because like the first night somebody breaks into the upstairs room and they don't know who it is. They think it's like there's another character who's like the overly obsessed guy who warns them constantly that don't go in the forest, they took my daughter, they'll come for you, and they think he's crazy, so they ignore that. the effects are really good. They're really good practical effects. The creatures look amazing. That's what I was afraid of. It was going to look really cheesy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think there's a couple really cheesy CGI scenes.
Oh, okay. It's not like 100%.
But it's not 100% practical.
Those always stand out when you have a...
They stand out. Yeah. It does. Because there's one scene where he's like, he finds like this fairy folk ooze that's left everywhere that these... creatures are, and he's like looking at it through a telescope or a microscope, and it just looks so bad because it's like eating the other cells and stuff, and I'm like, I'm like, you could have left that out. We didn't need to see that.
I mean, does it really add anything?
Just
to
see his reaction. That's all you need.
Yeah,
to know.
That's all they have to do. You know, the other scene is just there's a close up of a baby's face, and they obviously use CG to distort it a bit, and I was like, Beyond that, though, the creatures looked amazing.
Well, it's better than the baby in American Sniper, right?
I didn't see that.
Oh, God.
Or Eraserhead.
Hey, at least that baby is practical.
I 100% agree.
Nothing tops the baby in Dead Alive.
Oh,
the
shit.
The zombie baby.
Yep.
Yeah, that was
pretty good. Which we're going to watch sometime.
You know, when you're explaining this movie to me in the beginning, it kind of reminded me a little bit of The Witch.
Yeah, it's kind of like a more, I guess, not as... I guess
traditional
or dark or period piece type of film, but it's the same idea.
Yeah,
like these creatures come in from the woods to try to steal their baby.
The house, you know, next to the woods.
Yep. Yeah,
and it stars Joseph Maul, who's the husband, who I haven't seen in anything else, but was really good. Did really good, and the female Bojana Novakovic was a friggin' delight. Like she was really good. She played the typical like, I'm the mother just trying to protect my child. You know?
Oh, okay.
But she was really good. She was really, you know, usually I'm annoyed by those characters that are just like, don't go in the woods, you're stupid. Don't do that. But she was actually pretty smart about everything.
That's good.
Yeah.
I mean, that's one of the most disappointing things in horror films is when they're stupid. And it's just like,
I mean, they're stupid in the fact that it's like...
There's no tension.
You know, because what I like about it is there's no slow... It's not a slow burn. It's not like you're three quarters in the movie and you're still wondering if these things really exist.
Yeah.
It's literally like the scene, first scene, they're warned, don't go in the forest, you know.
Damn.
So that night, they take the iron off the bars, something comes in and leaves. The next day, they're warned again, and then all of a sudden, it's just straight up, we're getting haunted, you know, we're getting attacked by these creatures, and
good.
And it's relentless through, like, the whole movie, and yeah, I very glad I stumbled upon this film.
So this kind of seemed like an Irish indie horror film.
Yeah, that's what it felt like. Okay. And I love anything Ireland. I mean, I'm Irish, it's not being biased, but...
Oh, gross.
Gross. But I just don't think there was enough... I didn't think there was enough representation of, like, fairy folklore and Irish folklore and how scary it can be, you know? I mean, I used to read, like... the Hellboy comics were really neat because they would always touch upon a different culture's like folklore and make it more twisted and dark because it's not just, you know, fairies dancing around the forest. They're actually scary as shit and they'll hurt you and they'll kill your family and steal your babies, you know. And so they really, you know, they hit a home run with it, I felt, you know. And I didn't really have much more to say. I just wanted to say this was a really fun movie.
Small aside, is The Secret of Kells, is that Scottish or Irish? It's Irish. It does deal with, like, it's Gaelic, so it has to be.
Oh, gosh.
Has to be Irish, then, right?
I'm horrible at deciding between the two.
Yeah,
I'm going to say, if you like Irish movies, check out Ratcatcher by Lynn Ransby. That's fantastic.
Anyway, Secret of Kells and the follow up Song of the Sea is animated films. Yeah, you're right, though. It's definitely underrepresented in film.
And I thought, I mean, it was one of those nights where I was like, you know, screw, like, my diet, screw eating healthy, I'm gonna buy a bag of salt and vinegar chips and some cream soda, and I'm just gonna watch horror movies, and that was the first one I came upon, and it was great.
Was it extremely scary?
It's not extremely scary, but it's more definitely
tense.
More tense. More, okay. And it gives you that kind of, like, twist thing at the end, you know, like, oh my god, is this real, is this not?
Okay, kind of thing. And,
cool.
Yeah. No, I really liked
it's just a dream.
Just a dream.
And it's on Netflix?
It's on Netflix. Currently? You can watch it right now. Cool. Came out last year. So, yeah.
Nice.
That was my piece for today.
That was your piece for today?
Well, speaking of piece.
Peace. Yeah, I guess.
Doesn't make sense.
Well, Pisces. Well, speaking of Pisces.
getting a piece. Honestly, the lobster is about getting a piece.
Yeah. That's my movie that I have decided to talk about.
Shit.
The Lobster. This may be my favorite film of this year, just because I loved everything about it.
You almost choked up at the end.
I'm choking up over this movie. Like, tears are just popping out of the corner of my eyes because I'm remembering that experience. It's so great. Yorgos Lanthimos. Mm-hmm. I am probably butchering that name, but... he's not necessarily really a new director.
No,
he did Dogtooth. That's one I've heard a lot about before. Heard that one's really good.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess this would be like his, it's like his second...
Third or fourth, I think. He had another one, too. It wasn't as big.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, I'd say second big one to come out.
This is his first feature-length film to be in English.
Okay. Well, Lobster set up the story. It's this not... really futuristic, but just kind of like this alternate reality where as soon as you become single, you get sent to this like resort and you're given 45 days to find a partner.
That's not long enough if they send it to
Well, good luck. You can add days. But if you do not find a partner within 45 days, you get turned into an animal of your choosing.
Really?
Yep. Yeah.
Now, see, I know nothing about this movie. I haven't even seen the trailer, although from what you guys have been saying the last couple of days, I need to see this movie.
Yes.
But I don't know what I would choose.
Right?
I'm 39 and I'm single and I don't mind. I'd like to be a lion.
That'd be pretty badass.
Or a tiger.
That'd be a good one.
Yeah.
Well, see, Colin Farrell, he's David, the main character or whatever, our protagonist. And he chooses a lobster. Like, that's what he wants to get changed into.
Best reasoning ever, though.
And it's hilarious, the reason why.
So they ask him, he's like, well, you know, they live to be over 100 years old. They're fertile their entire lives, and I like the sea. I've always been fond of the sea.
You forgot one of the most important ones. They have blue blood like aristocrats.
Oh, that's right. I'm sorry. That was like the first thing said.
I love that. But yeah, so it's just, I don't want to give too much away about like story and wise. But how you can add days is that they go on hunting trips where they... people that are, they call them loners, and they like run away from this retreat. The people at the retreat are given Trent guns to go shoot them, and depending on how many people that they shoot with Trent guns and bring back, they get days added on. So if you don't think 45 days are long enough for you, just be a really great shot and be a great hunter.
Like that one lady.
Is it like, so you gotta find basically a mate, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Is it like speed dating or some shit? Or is is it like a little town where you just mingle?
Oh, gosh.
It's like a massive resort. Like, you just have like all these people get together and they have these weird, awkward, like social interactions it's like almost like a high school dance. Like, it's really awkward. Like, may I dance with you? And like, it's just such a bizarre like premise, but it's so well done.
It's just
so dry.
It's like amazing humor.
Yeah.
The first 5 minutes, like, perfectly sets up with the absurdity of the whole entire story. Funny as hell. It shouldn't be funny, but...
Now, I looked over, like, the cast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm like, this isn't going to get a wider release than just, like, independent places, or...
No.
No. I mean,
it got
weird.
Its wide release, quote-unquote, was this past couple weeks in America. I mean...
Which is more like a limited release.
Yeah, that's probably a couple hundred screens, honestly. Maybe not even 1,000. I don't think... I dare say. But
the movie deserves more than that. Like,
so, I don't want to go into spoilers. Obviously, that initial premise is such a smaller part of the film than you expect it to be.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
It goes way different. It goes to a crazy amount of places. Yeah. And... at one point, I'll tell you this. At one point, I was not happy with the way they went. And then another turn, I was like, it was okay. But the more I think about it, I have to see it again. Because I appreciate, again, we've always talked about this. I love when films can be wholly unique, do something different, stand out amongst the crowd. And this is like one of the best movies of the year, obviously.
Yeah.
But I have to watch it again to kind of understand why they went those ways. You know what I mean?
Now I'm curious what ways you're talking about.
We can talk about it after. We don't want to spoil the film if you haven't figured it out.
Yeah, we're usually...
Are you talking about the forest?
That, but then after too.
Okay. Okay.
Especially the ending.
Oh,
but I get that.
I love that ending.
I get it now. John's like, what the fuck's going on?
This is one of my favorite endings to a movie.
I just wanted to say, like, usually we don't mind doing the spoiler thing, especially if it's a movie that, like, one of us isn't really... keen on seeing, but this is one I really want to see, so I made a special request this episode to not have a spoiler.
And see, I don't even spoil it for listeners.
You think about it, we want people to see these movies, and they're such a limited release, they're not going to have the opportunity to see it. We had to travel 45 minutes to go see it.
Yeah.
So we, in these kinds of occasions, we want to make sure we can try to skirt the details and
let them wait until, you know, when it comes out
VOD
DVD online or Blu-ray, and then once it does come out, and you listeners, you watch it, come and talk with me and Jamie, or even John if he's seen it by that time, just because I love having conversations about this movie, because there is a lot to talk about. And just one of the beautiful things is that it's such a drastically different world than ours.
Mm-hmm.
But the way they do the exposition, is it's just peppered throughout, and it's not someone saying some line and you're like, oh, that's exposition.
It's not opening with text. In this alternate world, this happens.
But the year is 2025.
Yeah, but it's funny how it happens. So, like, when people have, like, one of their spouse passes away, or they have a breakup or divorce, it's like a law. It's a crime to be single. So you have to go to this retreat.
Yeah.
You have no choice. It's just bizarre. And it's definitely the theme of, you know, what essentially does this mean to be in love, and it, you know, what kind of, you know, in the choice of the matter and the rules in which we are supposed to find love. Yeah. It's all like dealt with in this movie really way, in a good way.
Cool. The dialogue, I love just like how awkward it is. And just like, my mom said that she thought it sounded like a 10-year-old had written the dialogue.
I know what you mean.
And I think I disagreed with her, but I understand what she means, just because it's very shallow.
Yeah.
It's just not really poetic in any way. It's just kind of, no one expresses anything.
What's funny to me is, I told somebody about this story, and they kind of got the idea that it's sounds like her. Because the her future is a little different, and everybody's kind of awkward like that. It's very similar in that kind of way. That there's some off, there's something off about these people and how they communicate with each other. And it really makes, it definitely exacerbates the theme. Like, the all these people are single. And, like, you know how it is when you're single, you're trying to talk to the opposite sex. You're like,
Well, I feel like they take it, like, even more of a direction.
Oh, 100%.
I feel like, you know, think of the most awkward person you talked to.
Me?
Like, yeah, probably. The most awkward person you've talked to in your life. And just think of a whole entire story where every character talks like that person.
So, aside from talking about the movie itself, I want to talk about the cast. I love the cast, obviously. Yes.
Colin Farrell was fantastic.
Of course, the bigger ones, Colin Farrell, Rachel Weisz. But there's some cool ones, John. You know, Olivia Colman. Olivia Colman, she was in a lot of stuff, like she was in Locke, Hot Fuzz. She was in the Doctor Who, I think.
Yeah.
Broadchurch. I mean,
she's great. She was the director.
She was the manager of the hotel.
Yeah. I also want to bring up Michael Smiley as Loner Swimmer.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
He was in The Hollow as just police officer. Yeah. He's such a good actor. He was in Kill List, which is really, really great film.
He doesn't have like a huge screen presence in it, but
he always works. Has these little roles, but he's so good. He should get like a bigger role.
Ashley Jensen. She is the lead female in Extras with Ricky Gervais, and she's fucking awesome and awkward. The one that she's trying to get with Colin Farrell.
Oh, nice.
She's so great. And John C. Reilly, they're all
John
awkward.
C. Reilly is.
Ben Whishaw, the new Q from the new 007 movies, the younger, skinnier guy.
He does a great job.
He's hilarious too.
Everyone does a really great performance.
Leah Seydoux, she was from Blue is the Warmest Color. She was Inspector recently.
She was the loner leader.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I want to talk about is the cinematography.
Yeah.
And how when they're at the resort, or like really throughout the whole entire movie, like the premise is kind of a depressing.
Mm-hmm.
But yet everything is lit so like comfortably. Like when they're at the resort, it's like, oh, this is really, you know, comfy. Kind of like really low yellow lights and tones throughout the hallways and these rooms, and they're outside. It's like bright sunny days. The forest, I mean, it's very lush. They got the greens just popping out.
You want to know why? We shot all natural light.
Really?
Except for a couple night scenes where they had to do some lights.
I can see that, yeah.
But I mean, that's...
That's pretty good.
Yeah, it looks great.
Yeah.
I must have used like an Arri or something, like digital. Digital can pick up better light. It's sad, but it's true.
But I just like that they... When they... I feel like every other movie that has like dystopian future where it's kind of like dour and just like, oh, this is a little bit depressing. They're going to throw in grays. They're going to mute all these tones, but... Mm. In this, they decide, you know, let's just capitalize on those colors and that tone.
Yep.
Soundtrack. Love it. The score.
I thought sometimes it was overbearing.
No, I love it.
Sometimes some placement of it, because it was a very similar, what's the musical term? Not rendition. Fuck.
Motif?
No, but it's not the theme. It's something similar to that, like the recurring theme. Comes back in every now and then. The same chords.
Motif?
It might be motif. There's another word for it I'm going to be stuck on forever. But so, yeah, the music, to me, at some points didn't fit to me. It's like they could have changed it up. But I get the overwhelming sense of dread behind it because it's really unnerving in a way.
Oh yeah, like the dun dun.
It's like, yeah, and you're like you have so little time, like it counts down. So it's pretty cool that way.
That ending is one of my favorite endings for a movie ever.
Yeah.
Just okay. I've watched the Saw movies. I've watched Hostel. Seen like all these gory movies, and yet I felt extremely tense.
Oh.
To where I was squirming in my seat, and I noticed like everyone else in the theater, they're like turning away, they're like hiding their face.
Oh.
And then, yeah.
Yeah.
How it capitalizes on that is just. And I'm curious what you think about the fade to black and what it means.
I mean, I think they just cut.
Yeah, it's ambiguous.
It's never meant to tell you what it is. So,
please go see The Lobster. If you have a theater that's near you, go so it can get more money. And so we can get, like, this better win an Oscar for something. It probably won't because it's too early.
Well, it technically came out last year.
Oh.
It has this American release this year, so it does have a chance because of that weird time. The way it's, when it's released in America, that's when the Oscars are.
Personally, I feel like it should take one.
Colin Farrell gained 40 pounds for this role.
He
looks so schlubby. I was like, wait a minute, he has a stomach. I'm like, what happened?
Yeah.
I forgot all about like his toned abs and hot chest. What?
You can always Google it, Jamie.
That's right.
See, but what's so weird about Colin Farrell, though, is just like, he just knocks some of these roles just like right out of the park, and it's just not something that's really expected from him. I mean, we had the Total Recall remake, and it's like he took that, and then he follows it up with a few other movies.
And recently you were debating if it was his best role. I mean, In Bruges is so good, but it's so different than this role. He's such a great actor. Oh, man.
That's why I feel like this is his best role that he's ever done, is just how he's able to pull off that awkwardness and just like the idiosyncratic just personality is just amazing. So many great jokes.
He's come a long way from Bullseye.
Oh yes.
Oh my gosh. That character actually makes an appearance.
Bullseye?
Yeah.
Wow.
It's when he goes on his first hunt.
Wow.
Oh, right, and then you see
like,
that.
He moves his hair piece back.
And he's got the,
he's got the cross on his forehead. It's awesome.
Yep.
Really? Jesus. He uses Irish accent?
And Captain America comes in like, where the fuck am I? I'm in Ireland.
I'm going to see this movie.
But
I want to turn into a bald eagle.
Yeah.
Captain America.
Of course you do, Captain America. We all know you want to be an eagle.
You get shot as soon as you turn in. So, anyway.
Yeah, Lobster, please go see it. It's amazing.
I think he's talking to you, John.
I will go see it.
I'm talking to everyone. The first chance in the world.
I'll see it again. That's for sure, if you let me know.
People who don't even watch movies, go watch this movie.
Yep.
You'll probably hate me, but.
And hate movies forever. Because you won't expect what you
get.
You'll never know what you're hitting into.
This isn't a popcorn flick.
No. Although I did eat great popcorn at Railroad.
Okay, yeah.
That butter popcorn. Oh, so good.
So good.
So anyway, another film that's not a popcorn flick is the communal movie this week, and that is the 1989 classic, Do the Right Thing.
Classic is used so loosely these days.
Oh, damn.
So loosely.
Which is going to be interesting because I saw this movie and I was into movies and stuff when this first came out in 1989.
Mm-hmm. When he was into movies. He's no longer into movies.
I'm no longer into movies.
Have you seen Hollywood recently? We have a podcast dedicated to how shitty it is now.
Meaning, I was around when the buzz of this movie originally started.
Okay.
And then Jamie, I know you probably saw it a few years after.
10 years ago.
And August has just seen it now, so it's going to be interesting to get all three perspectives. Almost three generations. I'm old.
Well, all right, introduce this wonderful movie.
So Do the Right Thing.
Introduce this awesome movie.
Do the Right Thing was the breakout film of Spike Lee, a Spike Lee joint, if you will. I don't know. It's essentially a film all intents and purposes, like if you look at it, it's about a pizza place. In the suburbs, is it Harlem?
I think it's Brooklyn. It's
Brooklyn, okay.
No.
Because he had a Brooklyn Dodgers jersey on, so yeah, I'm pretty sure it's Brooklyn. Oh. But the point is, it's obviously about racial tension. And it takes place on a really sweltering day in New York City.
It's like the hottest
day. Yeah.
Yep. And, you know, this pizza place is in the middle of this, African-American community. And it's an Italian pizza joint, and that is the impetus for a lot of racial tension. And there's also a Korean grocery store nearby. But I want John to kind of take a little bit on this because okay. He had a cool thing about the heat.
Well, the heat is a metaphor for the rise in tensions.
Oh, yeah.
Between this community and the different races that are in the community and their inherent, I guess, bigotry to each other, even if it's not there.
Yeah.
Because when things like ratchet up and things get tense, all of a sudden all of that comes to the surface, and there's several really good scenes that really showcase that. But it's a really good commentary on, which is ironically, a lot of what we're talking about in society now, which is racism gone? Is it still there? Or how do we feel about racism? I think people like Trump have kind of brought that to the surface in a lot of people. Yeah. And it's more of a discussion, just like it was a discussion back when this movie came out.
It's sad because the fact we have to keep the fact that it holds up so well in our current culture is indicative, I think, that it's still not over.
Yeah, we progressed.
I mean, close.
I disagree.
Well, I mean, like you think about
we've
it, right?
Progressed
at the end of the film, they dedicated to the people who died during racial encounters in that time. Obviously, a couple years later, Rodney King had an issue and all that stuff, but. I mean, the whole cop thing now, and Black Lives Matter, is the hashtag is huge everywhere. I mean, you have the fact that, you know, Trayvon Martin and all those kinds of things are still happening today. If this film came out today, it would dedicate it to all these people in the past 2 years.
But that shit's always been there.
Well, it's always been there, but...
It came back
up. It's just how much is there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the thing is, back when this came out, and right before the Rodney King video came out, like, you know, black communities have been saying for decades, like, we are being abused and murdered by police. And everyone in the white communities were like, oh, we don't believe it. You know, or like, show us some evidence of this. And then when the Rodney King video came out, it was, like, extraordinary because it was like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
It's caught on tape. It is true.
Yeah.
And now, I guess, in modern day, with the internet and everyone having mobile devices, it's just, it's there all the time. You see it all the time.
Every time there's somebody abused, I mean, the video's there to have people debate whether or not they went over the line. I mean, they crossed the line. And I think most times it looks like it's they are crossing the line. They are kind of overreaching their power.
Okay, to tie this into the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Radio Khalid?
Radio Rahim.
Radio Rahim.
Rahim.
Mm-hmm.
Was his death accidental? Or was it purposeful death?
I think, man.
Is it somewhat his fault? Find it at his fault.
Well, it's not his fault because that's the argument that people use, that, oh, it's your fault. You should have been acting up or being violent or doing this because I ended up killing you from the cop's perspective.
Yeah.
But it never had to come to being killed.
Here's the thing. You got a guy who's like beating the shit out of another person. And he's a big guy. And you got three people holding him, telling him to get down. And they're, like, having to hold back his arms. And he's still got him, like, at his chest.
But once
like,
once they had him off of him, and the cops were holding him back, and that one cop had him in a chokehold with a nightstick, lifted him off the ground, there was a point where it was like, okay, that's enough.
That's enough, yeah.
We just arrest him and take him away. But that's not what they did. And sadly, in reality, that's...
It's happened.
Happens.
He's still tensing it up, though.
That literally...
Like, you need to just,
yeah, but
like,
you literally had the other cop saying, that's enough. That's enough. And...
Well, yeah, I mean...
No, but this is literally
the guy was behind them, so he couldn't see.
A few years ago, this happened exactly the same way.
Yeah.
Big guy, got held up a couple of people. He wasn't really doing anything wrong in this case.
No, he wasn't. He was selling
cigarettes.
He got
choked out to death.
Even he was yelling, I can't breathe, I can't breathe, and they just stayed on him.
Yeah.
And
that's what I felt happened in the end of this movie.
Yeah.
Because they when you saw him, he was subdued, he was passing out. And then they just kept going until he died. Oh, well.
But it still looked like he was resisting.
I mean, he's probably struggling to breathe at that point. I mean, you can't... I mean, to me, I was cut and dry. Like, he was dying. And when you have another cop saying it's enough, or whoever else said that's enough, that just... Maybe it's a good idea to stop.
Well, the one thing I'll have to say is they don't accurately depict passing out or dying from asphyxiation. Because you pass out before you...
Okay.
Die of not being...
You must... Are you David Carradine? Should we know about something?
No, it's just... It's true.
Kung Fu grip around your neck. I know.
Like your consciousness shuts down.
Mm-hmm.
And then you die if you continually get choked. So, whereas he would have been tense, you know, tensing up,
mm-hmm.
passed out, and his arms would have relaxed, and they'd probably been like, oh, well, shit, he's passed out. But I understand, you know, whatever, whatever. I guess I'm on the cop side, and I'm a racist.
Why are you being a racist on the cop
side? August, damn it. But, okay.
I'm just saying...
No, I understand your point of view, because that's... Always the argument comes down to that.
Yeah. It's not cut and dry. Yeah. I mean, like... If there's a guy that's having to be held back by three grown men...
Hmm.
I'm sorry. If I'm one of those grown men, I'm going to be scared shitless. And I'm just going to be like... this guy's got to go on the ground or get subdued somehow.
Mm.
And it's heat of the moment to tie it in with the theme of heat and, you know, rising racial tension. That, you know, heat of the moment, you don't know what happens.
Sure.
But,
well, it's the whole point of the film, though. It has to do with, like, tempers getting the best of people and losing control. And,
oh,
you know,
yeah.
Maybe your intention isn't to... That cop's intention probably wasn't to kill him.
No.
But at that point, when you're that angry or that flustered and you're just not
yeah.
paying attention, shit like that happens.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
And I mean, honestly, I guess the reason why I'm siding with the cops is because Radio Raheem is an asshole.
He doesn't like Radio Raheem.
I
thought Radio
him.
Raheem was awesome.
He's cool, but
him.
Then...
He's cool,
he's
but he's an
cool.
asshole.
He's
cool.
Obnoxious.
He's the definition of cool, but he's still an asshole when he
sure.
wants to be.
Most people, assholes are in some way cool or vice versa.
No.
Cool people are sometimes assholes.
He was the coolest guy in the
no.
neighborhood. Yes, he was. What movie did you watch?
I don't think
he goes around just like any other
he's
person.
A,
he's like, motherfucker.
He is pretty obnoxious in
yeah.
terms of his music.
And then I'm a blast
music. But back in the day,
I
told
I
you this last night. Back in the day, if you had the biggest boombox and it made the most noise, you were the coolest guy in the... Like, they had that little radio
mm-hmm.
off.
Mm-hmm.
with the other guys and they're trying to, you know, outplay the other one and Radio Raheem wins.
I equivalate that to like someone with like the biggest exhaust on his fucking truck.
Well, yeah,
speeding down
the biggest
road.
Pair of
that's not cool.
Nuts.
Well, no,
it's obnoxious.
You don't think it's cool and I don't think it's cool, but it's just
to them
that's what's cool.
I guess I don't understand that.
So, What character who bugged the shit out of me was Bugging Out. Played
yeah.
as in a chameleon role, Giancarlo Esposito. Good lord, the man, that guy can act. Like I forgot it was him. I looked up the cast before I watched it.
Yeah.
Like, oh shit, he's in this movie. Never looked at the name. I watched the movie, like at the end I'm like, wait, I see his name. Oh fuck, he's Bugging Out this whole time. I didn't even recognize him. He was annoying as shit. Because you know, and this is obviously the impetus for the film's progression, but his what he was fighting for was so racist he didn't get it.
Yeah.
Because it's their establishment, they're not against black people, they're in a black neighborhood.
Yeah.
You know, Danny Aiello's character is not racist, maybe the son, John Turturro, is.
Yeah.
But because he wanted to represent his heritage of Italian Americans,
yeah.
he's like, no, you need to have black people up there too. It's like, well,
no.
Everybody in this film is racist.
Yes.
That's the thing. That's the whole point.
Yeah.
They're all... Even when Danny Aiello's character is pushed too far,
mm-hmm.
he starts dropping the N-word and everything,
yep.
and he's getting frustrated.
Yeah.
Which you might not 100% mean it.
No.
But when you're put in a situation like that, it
yeah.
comes out.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I know, like, it's anger. Like, I thought the same thing you had mentioned when this movie first came out, you know, at first it was like, is it all just... Black people are better than white people.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
that's
you know, but
why
not.
I didn't want to see it is because I thought it was just, you know,
yeah.
oh, it's going to make me feel guilty about something.
Mm-hmm.
But Spike Lee does a great job of showing that, no, everyone has a potential to be a racist asshole.
Yeah.
It doesn't
yeah.
matter what race. Especially that one scene where they actually do the...
To the camera.
To, yeah, to the camera from race to race to race, and they so just good. Drop all the racial slurs yep. about each other.
Except know? For Samuel L. Jackson's character. He comes in. He's yeah. like, all of you need to chill out.
Yo, chill!
You know, I think there should be a tagline for Do the Right Thing, and it's, everyone needs a Xanax. Because...
Do the right thing, ellipsis, or don't.
Or don't.
Or do the right thing, do the writer thing.
The writer
do thing. The yelling thing. That, okay, I just want to get this out.
Sure.
Before we go even more into this discussion, I will never watch this movie again in my life.
Okay. Are you glad that you finally saw it, though, to see like what it was all about?
Yeah, I am glad that I saw what it was all about. And I mean, I'm not, by saying that I'm never going to watch this again, I'm not saying it's a horrible movie.
It makes you feel uncomfortable. But it's meant to do that.
It never okay. It makes me feel uncomfortable because everyone is fucking yelling
yeah.
in every yeah. single scene. It's like 2 hours of yelling at each other, and I'm just like, oh, this is really annoying. I need to go meditate, or you know.
I guess you know, thinking about it after the fact, listen, I never realized.
Play afterwards, to kind of calm me down.
I never realized at all that they were all yelling until you said that. I'm like, oh yeah,
it's like continuously.
You wouldn't have survived in the streets.
No, I
you wouldn't have made it.
That's why I don't. Oh, I was
the mean streets.
That's why I don't live mean. In the streets. I, that sounds really bad, but that's oh bad. But Spike Lee's character
Mookie,
his yeah. girlfriend. Any scene with her, I was like, "Is this over yet?"
Yeah, she's Rosie. Like, yeah,
she's just like, "Shut up, woman."
Yeah, I've always thought she was pretty annoying. Oh, God. Rosie Perez, for anyone wondering. Man, Mookie... So, Mookie... We talked about this a couple weeks ago. Mookie's character doesn't really have much of an arc. He's like, all I do is gotta get paid.
Not really.
At even the end, he has a little bit, end, he kind wants to get of, paid. Yeah, it's just all about money. Like, it's weird, because he's such a deadbeat. He's such a lazy man.
Yeah.
I don't know, like...
Well, you can't consider him like... He's not like the hero of
no.
the movie at all.
Not at all, no.
No one's the hero. No.
Sweet nope. Dick Willie's my hero.
Because we all know how he got his name.
I love Sweet Dick Willie.
Yeah, he is pretty funny.
Yeah. Those scenes were all improvised, by the way, those three old guys. The entire thing.
Nice, because those... They were so entertaining, those three guys. And actually, Sweet Dick Willie, I like him because he would poke holes in everyone's theories mm-hmm. about what's right and what's wrong, and he'd be like, ah, oh, shut up, you're not going to do shit, you know?
Yeah. The other guy's like, yeah, I've seen this store boarded up for decades, and this Korean, I'm not going to go into yeah. racial stuff, yeah. but within 1 year, they have a business, and they opened it up. It's like, yeah, what are you going to do? You're not going to do anything.
I like when he gets up, he's like, I'm going to go give him my money, you know? And then he says, you're talking about off the boat? You came off the boat.
I kind of like that part when he's like, you know, that was boarded up, and then they moved in, they started a business, and he's like, well... Why don't you do something with it? And he's like, because I'm black. And he's like, come on.
Well, that's like, they don't make excuses for anything that's, you know, they have or not have in the film. Mm-hmm. Speaking of uncomfortable scenes, what'd you think of Sal and Mookie's sister?
Oh,
I didn't find it uncomfortable at all.
I don't think Sal was really interested in her that way.
No.
I don't know.
I think he was just interested in her as a person.
No, I think he wanted her.
They never went into it enough. I mean, you kind of like... It was left up to your opinion as an audience.
But you definitely see that there's a history of it, because you see Mookie's face.
Yep.
Yeah.
And then you see John Turturro's character's face.
Vito or Pino.
And they're just like, obviously this has been going on for a while and it bothers both of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would have to say no, because when Mookie confronts Sal... Sal's just like, before you continue, it's not like that.
But do you think it's Spike Lee's take on the whole idea of the hypocritical white man, like back when they owned slaves and they would consider slaves as less than human, but if it was a hot black slave, I can sleep with them, you know, or I can...
Well, that's because, you know, the penis overtakes the brain in those situations.
That's a good point. That's actually a good point. That's a really good point. But I think that's a play on that. I think it's him saying that.
Sure.
It did. They could be racist to us all they want, but if it's like a hot black woman, then all of a sudden racism goes away.
You know, but like that's the thing. Like I think the biggest arc is Sal, because he's trying so hard to be a part of this community, and he does support them. And then, and like vice versa, they support him. And then eventually, yeah, even he can be swayed into racism. And so like, I think he has the best arc.
He does. I mean, especially those scenes. There's so many scenes where he's so kind.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
when the mayor comes in and he just hands him a dollar and he lets him sweep up the front. And
right.
When
He's like, hey, you drop this.
The other guy that was trying to sell the pictures, Smiley.
Yeah. Smiley, yeah.
And he's in the door. And then John Turturro's is like bitching him out. And then he goes out and like he buys photos from him. You know, he's
like. And at the end, he lets the kids in and starts the whole freaking...
Yeah. He's like, you know,
Martin Lawrence.
Clothes and stuff like that. And yeah, he lets him in. Like, And that's the thing. It's like, it seems like with Sal, like, his racism was only provoked.
Yeah.
When he felt like he was being disrespected.
And he was being disrespected.
He was.
That's why I get part of his argument, August's argument about Brady Raheem being a dick. I mean, you're going into a fucking business. They're not, they don't have to serve you if you're going to be an asshole like that.
And he said, well, when Radio Raheem comes in the first time with his boombox blaring.
Two slices.
Two slices. Yeah, he's trying to order over this really loud music. But Sal, he doesn't say, later on, he does say, you know, no jungle music, no rap, and yada yada. The first thing he says is, this is my establishment, no music.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like he's got, you know, Italian, the Godfather soundtrack going on in the background.
Yeah.
And he can't hear it because the person with the moonbox, he's just like, no, I don't like music in my establishment.
I think, to me, now I think about this after you say this, it's almost like he was trying to make his pizzeria, I said it some weird way, like a neutral zone. There's no, like...
Yeah.
Racial intolerance. No. There's only pride of his race.
It was just pizza. He was just serving the community with pizza for like what, 20 years or something like that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he said he wanted to do another 15 more.
Yeah.
And obviously, it didn't work out.
No.
It makes sense. Like when his son was saying, why don't we sell the place and go back to our neighborhood? And he's like, there's like 50 pizzeria joints out there.
Exactly.
Yeah.
There's no. And then when he even mentions, like, these people grew up on my food, and I watched them go from young to old, and the older to get even more older. So he really felt like he was a part of it. Yeah. So that for them to, like, destroy his place at the end,
he lost everything.
It was his heart that got destroyed. It was like he thought he was, like, part welcomed into the community.
That's what kind of pissed me off with Mookie at the very end, because he says, you know, oh, you got insurance money. And it's like, that doesn't matter.
That wasn't the point. Yeah.
Now he even tells him, he's like, it's not about the money.
Fucking bare hands.
Yeah.
These hands.
Yeah. Which I want to talk about. We talked a little bit last night. Mookie throwing the garbage can in there.
But, yeah.
My theory had always been, and might not be because Mookie's kind of an asshole, but it looked like, like, all the anger was being focused on Sal and his sons. And I don't know if Mookie thought they're going to get a beat down or killed. So Mookie kind of just threw it into the window just to divert everyone into there to destroy that. To destroy the shop rather than go after them.
It's a good point. It makes sense.
But then when he goes back and is an asshole asking for money, I was like, maybe that's not. But it was just something I always thought of when I watched it.
It's a good point, but it's not shot that way. It's not shot to make you think that he's trying to save him.
I more see it as a way of Spike Lee saying, we need to not focus our violence towards each other, but the establishment.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, that's actually pretty good. Damn, man.
Yeah.
Well, PhD in filmography here.
That line right there is worth a PhD.
Yep. Give August a degree, please.
Yeah, and that'd be kind of great. Get a degree. I liked its depiction of like late 1980s New York lifestyle. Like, I really felt like it was true to that era.
Yeah.
I mean, just even with characters. Yeah. Just like the different types.
It's such a great personality. The entire film oozed a certain time period, a certain strife that people are going through. In a modern day setting at the time.
Mm-hmm. So I always love like movies in New York City in the 70s and 80s. It just has so much more character ever since. Was it Giuliani cleaned it up or whatever it was?
It was dangerous in a way, so it was more exciting. Now it's just the backdrop.
Man, those streets were always so dirty. I mean, that's kind of something. Now we're going to get into what environmentalism is.
Yeah.
But no, it's just like, you know, taking care of the place where you live. And I guess I can kind of see a little correlation between them. It's just like, they even bring it up, I think, those three guys about, no, someone else, but supporting the community.
Yeah.
Like, why don't you do something for the community, for us?
Yeah.
Rather than just sitting on your stoop and doing nothing.
Was it Ruby the mother sister to the mayor?
It was I think it was some younger kids were saying it to another.
Oh, they were saying it to the mayor, weren't they?
Oh yeah, that was one of my favorite scenes.
Yeah.
Or no. It was Mookie's sister Jade. She said it to Buggin' Out. Like, could divert all that energy.
Focus your energy on
something else. Maybe it's something for the community.
Yeah.
Yeah. Rather than destroying.
Yeah.
And gee, now that's just Sal's Pizzeria is just gonna be another boarded up building.
Mm-hmm. But I do like how you get both points of view from people when they interact in the movie.
Oh yeah,
like when the mayor is giving his little monologue about how his five kids were hungry and he was stood in the doorway and he couldn't do anything, and you kind of feel for him.
Yeah.
And then the other guys jump in and be like, "No, if I had five starving kids, I'd do everything
get
I could,
a job,
get a job, and get all this." You know, so you see both points of view.
Well, I didn't know if he meant like that. That was from before.
How do you mean?
Or if that was like, well, he's a lonely guy.
Well, yeah, it must have been before.
So
I'm sure they're all grown up kids.
I wonder if he like, yeah, he went
well,
through
yeah, he
that,
went through
and
all
now
that,
didn't he? Something happened, and now he's depressed, and he's a drunk. And
yeah.
So
man, fuck those kids. I maybe I'm older, but that's such disrespect to your elders.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
Come on.
It was disrespectful, but he was being truthful in what
sure.
he was saying. But yeah.
Well, sure. Yeah, I mean, no one should be just a drunk and just drinking all the time. But I mean, at least the mayor was actually trying. He was doing things for the community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, he was always nice.
Yeah, and when he saved that kid, it was even a doubt if he had saved him. Like, he had hurt him. And the kid had to be, like, slapped around to even tell, is that true? Did he save you from the car? Like, they didn't even want to believe him because he's been a drunk. It's kind of sad.
Because he actually kind of has an arc, too.
He does.
Him and mother sister.
Well, and he was, like, really the only person that went over to Sal and his sons.
Yeah.
And kind of, like, protected them or whatever, because I guess, you know, him and Sal had a deep history.
Well 20 years together or knowing each other.
Well, there's so many characters in it, it's great. Like, even like, again, the four kids there that are the kind of mouthy and troublemaking.
Yeah,
but like when Buggin' Out supposedly gets his shoe run over by the guy in the Larry Bird jersey, and I love that scene because it really shows like your biases towards where you come from.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because they immediately all go over and they start yelling at this guy.
Yeah.
You shouldn't live here. You shouldn't live in this community. Go back to Connecticut.
Where's it, Mass?
Or Massachusetts.
Yeah.
Go back to Massachusetts. And then he turns around and says, I was born in Brooklyn. And they're all like, Like, oh, okay. You know where you're from. It's okay that you're white.
And yeah, but even that, like, you're in our neighborhood. Like, that was racist too.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I liked it that it wasn't directed towards just like one group of people.
It would have been lambasted if it was, you know. It was really good in showing that point. And
there's something would be accurate, because
no.
Everyone has a prejudice against other races.
I'm prejudiced against hipsters.
I guess
I'm the anti-hipster.
Why don't you go back to wherever hipsters come from? Portland, Oregon.
Portland, Maine now.
Oh, Portland, Maine. Yeah, that's not that too
far. Oh, hey.
Both Portlands are fucking overrun. The virus has affected everyone.
No, that's okay. I can't run with hipsters.
I don't think so. You're not that
douchey.
You're a nice person.
I'm a nice hipster. Oh, God.
You just like certain things, that's all.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so that's Do the Right Thing. I mean, obviously, there's a lot to talk about with race, and that's actually what we're going to do next episode. We're kind of going to delve in some topics related to race in film.
Do we have a right to do that?
No, not at all.
Because we're
white
all white.
All white.
We're all white.
I mean, of our opinions taken with a grain of salt.
Sure. I mean, we're not going to solve any problems, but...
Yeah.
We're going to talk about it.
We're going to kind of have a conversation about them, because it's good. It's important to talk about it.
Well, there will be some white tears shed over white guilt.
Yep. I'm guilty.
We're all guilty.
Yeah, so thank you for tuning in to Not Quite Hollywood. Of course, we're on... We have an email. If you have any questions, please, or topics, suggestions for topics, or for a movie for us to watch, we'd like to hear it. You know, notquitepod@gmail.com is our email.
And I need someone to talk about lobster with.
Yeah, exactly, and that, we can do that with Facebook too. We have our Facebook page.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Not quite podcast. Not quite Hollywood. Search us on Facebook and like us there. We can have a more immediate conversation.
We have our fingers in everything.
In everyone.
I don't think that's how you get likes.
That's how you can get some likes.
How do we lose all our subscribers all of a sudden? That's weird. But stay tuned for the next episode, and we'll dive into Race.
Yeah, see you later, y'all.
Later.
Bye.
Bye.